Well, good morning, everyone. It's Saturday, it's 8:02, and welcome to the call. And I'd like to extend a very special welcome to everyone who's joining us for the very first time. We are honoured to be a part of your journey. I'm Mark Faithful, and joining me, as always, is the wonderful Roger Fairhead.
Good morning, everyone.
So our purpose for teaching this lesson is to help you search out and become aware of what, well, it might be a blind spot for you or for someone in your life. So, with no further ado, let's jump right into the lesson. Have you ever thought that questions and answers are really two sides of the same coin? Every question has an answer. And if you need some answers in your life, then the first thing you really need to do is be asking the right question. You know, getting the answer can often actually be the easy part. It's asking the right question that can be tricky. Now, I don't know why, but shaping questions, it can be so much more difficult than we might imagine. The quality of the question we ask ourselves determines the quality of the answers that we get in our lives. So let me give an example of what I mean. Now, how many of you have thought to ask yourself this question? Because if we want to improve the quality of the results we're getting in our lives, then this is a question that everybody on this call really needs to be able to answer. And so the question is, what is the primary cause of my results? What is the primary cause of your results? You see, if we want to change our results, if we want to permanently change our results, then we want to know the answer to that question, don't we? If you're a manager responsible for a team of people, then you need to know the answer to that question. Yet your boss is depending on you to know the answer to that question. If you run your own business, then you need to know the answer to that question. Your family's depending on it. So let me ask you, what is the primary cause of your results? Now, if you ask that question to a technician, they'd probably say it's technical knowledge or maybe a dependable service. If you ask a manager what's the primary cause of your results, he'll say teamwork. If you ask the president of the company, she'll say it's vision. It's interesting, isn't it? But we tend to see the world not as it is necessarily, but we see the world as we are. We see the world as we are. Yeah, you've heard the expression, and if all you've got in your tool belt is a hammer, then everything looks like a nail, right?
That's absolutely right. But the question is not specific just to making money. What's the primary cause of our results? We're talking about all of our results. The results we get in every area of our life. You see, consciously or unconsciously, intentionally or unintentionally, whether we like it or not, we get results in every area of our life. And those results are the effect of often unseen causes. So what are those causes? What are the primary causes? Now, I don't know about you, but when I was asked the question, what is the primary cause of your results, I couldn't answer it. Maybe you can. I couldn't answer it at the time. I didn't know what it was. And in that uncomfortable moment, the sort of mental squirmy while you search frantically for the right answer, that's when it hit me. If I didn't know what the answer to that question was, if I didn't know what the primary cause of my results was, the primary cause, then how was I ever going to permanently change my results? Now, on the one hand, I was disappointed in myself for not knowing the answer, but on the other hand, I was actually overjoyed that I now knew that I didn't know the answer. Because while I didn't know what I didn't know, I wasn't looking for the answer. But now I knew I didn't know, now I wasn't going to rest until I knew exactly what the answer was. Let me give you an example. Have you ever heard anyone say, I'm so glad that I'm out of there. I don't know why I worked for such idiots in the first place. They're harsh words, but we've probably heard similar stories over the years. When a new colleague joins the firm and tells stories of how she felt undervalued in her previous job. But it doesn't need to be that way. Surely we should be able to exit a position with the same attitude and integrity with which we entered it. This started me thinking about my employment history. The first company I worked for had been good to me. They'd given me an apprenticeship and paid me well. When I felt that it was time to move to pastures new, I did the expected thing. I handed in my notice and prepared to work out my notice until I started my new job. I was a process specialist in an international tire manufacturing company. My role was to provide technical oversight for one of the four main processes in the making of tires in the UK. I'd liaise with the central team overseas and then provide advice and guidance to the UK factories and to determine the overall equipment requirements to meet the overall manufacturing requirements for the next 5 to 10 years. I manage the projects that came out of that. A colleague working in one of the UK factories needed my help on a project, and he'd invited me to work alongside him for a day to address and help resolve his challenges. Well, it seems the factory manager wasn't happy and called my colleague to one side, demanding I should be escorted from the factory immediately. My colleague took some of his ground, however. He knew that he could trust me to help him and knew that I had no intention of causing any trouble. That was the first time I came face to face with the process of moving from one company to another. I was completely oblivious to the fact that someone might think of trying to sabotage their old place of employment before they left. I guess that's just naivety on my part, caution on the part of the factory manager, and wisdom on the part of my colleague. I recall some advice that my father had shared with me when I was about to leave home for the first time. You know the sort of advice. Although I suspected his advice was more targeted at personal relationships, it carried me well through my career. His advice was, whatever you do, just imagine that the great aunts are watching. Now, my dad had three aunts, my great aunts. They'd never married. They all lived together in the same house, and they were the absolute epitome of Victorian spinsters that you read about in Charles Dickens. Maybe some of you have even watched Hinge and Bracket for the UK audience, complete with elegant furniture, hardback chairs, sugar cubes to accompany the bone china teacups. They'd been teachers and headmistresses, and one had even been awarded the MB for work with the Red Cross. So when I was leaving my employer, I had only one thought: to continue doing what I'd been employed and trained to do. I believe that it's not just about starting well, it's about finishing well. As the old saying goes, hats off to the past, coats off to the future. Well, on that occasion, I managed to get it right. Perhaps more by naivety than planning, but have I ever got it wrong? Oh, yes. I spent a short time working with a company where I felt that I didn't leave well. No handshakes, no loose ends tied up, no explanations. I felt terrible, and I still do to this day. I felt as though I'd let myself down and others down. Why? Well, it started with a phone call telling me that my father had had a serious heart attack and was on life support. This was followed by a frantic dash to the hospital, and our family stood around his bed as he breathed his last. Then some silence. My brother-in-law said quietly, Roger, would you pray for us all? It was one of the hardest things I've ever done. But as a Christian, as a leader, and as the eldest son, I felt it my duty to see that Dad left well. I owed it to Dad, and I owed it to my family. The following months were filled with probate, endless form filling, as well as my personal grief, and work got sidelined. I'd let that company down. So where does this leave me today? Well, I've recently parted company with a man I've been working with for 27 years. He's more than a boss, he's a friend. We've been through a lot together, and we've seen his business grow substantially over the years. Once again, the parting was amicable, and we look forward to working together again in the future. He knows he can call me if he needs me, and an extra pair of hands, someone to help with the transition. Just as if my great aunts were watching, I feel that it's right to model good attitudes, to lead the way with honesty and integrity in the workplace. Sure, we won't get it right every time, but on the whole, people want to work with people who they know, like, and trust. John Maxwell says that life is a matter of choices, and every choice you make makes you. So looking back now, I can see all the problems that I'd experienced in my life had really been because I couldn't answer this question. But once I really began to think about the question, I mean really ponder, really quite understand the question, and after paying a large sum of money for the answer, along with the meaning behind the answer, and once again, I really began to understand the answer, then my entire life began to change, and it certainly proved to be a worthwhile investment for me. Once I got my mind around this concept, the impact was immediate. It gave me something called hope. Now, the answer's simple, but the implications are enormous, and it's simply this. To the question, what's the primary cause of the results that you get in your life? The answer is simply this. It's attitude. Attitude. And our attitude springs from who we are, doesn't it? Genetically and, more importantly, environmentally, who we've learned to be. It comes from our beliefs, our values. It comes from the way we see ourselves. And it's critically important.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely right, Roger. Now, your attitude controls the quality of absolutely everything you get in your life. Now, when I heard about that for the first time, I had to admit, I thought, that's a little bit of an anticlimax. I mean, I was like, attitude? Okay. We're on this big build-up, and it's like, attitude? Like I've never heard of attitude before. But I've slowly come to realize that you need a respectful understanding in order to comprehend the enormity of why it's attitude. You see, we've heard the word attitude before, but we need to know why attitude makes such a big difference. And in order to understand that, we need to know what attitude is. But attitude is one of those things that's easy to identify, but much more difficult to actually define. But see, if we can't define it, how are we ever going to change it? So at some point in our lives, we've all been reminded of our attitude, haven't we? You know, if you could just improve your attitude, your results would be much better. If you had a better attitude, your grades would be better. If you had a better attitude, your performance on the football field would be better. If you had a better attitude, you could earn more money. You'll never get anywhere with that kind of attitude. You know what I mean, right? But it's a funny thing. But if your attitude towards the world is good, then you tend to get good results. If your attitude is excellent, you'll tend to get excellent results. And if your attitude is so-so, you'll live in a world that's not particularly bad, not particularly good, just meh. Well, you're probably asking yourself, what kind of attitude do you have? What kind of attitude do I have? And Earl Nightingale had a very simple test that gives you a pretty accurate idea. Well, I think actually it's quite a very accurate idea, actually, of what your attitude has been like up until this point in your life. And just answer this question with a simple yes or no. Do you feel the world is treating you well? If your answer is a quick yes, then congratulations, your attitude is good. If your answer is no, your attitude is bad. And if you've got trouble deciding, then your attitude is average. Now, that can sound a bit harsh on first inspection, but see, the more you study this, the more you think about it, the more you analyze it, the more sense it's going to make to you.
You see, our environment, which is another way of saying how the world treats us, is nothing more than a reflection of our own attitude. Earl Nightingale said our environment was a merciless mirror of our attitude, a merciless mirror of our attitude. Whatever attitude we hold up, the world reflects back to us in our experience of the world. Our attitude is responsible for how much of our potential we utilize. Contrary to popular belief, it's not a matter of how much talent and ability we have that counts. It's how much of what we have that we use. That's what really determines our results. Whatever conservative limits our potential may or may not have, they're so far in excess of our habitual use of our potential that they don't even warrant a moment's thought. Think of this. Almost everybody can read, can't they? But how many people actually do read? Our ability may determine what we can do, but it's our attitude that determines what we will do. Lord Macaulay put it beautifully when talking about imagination. He said, most people's imagination is like the wings of an ostrich. They enable us to run, but not to soar. so we don't even walk. Isn't that powerful? We have a tendency to look at a few people who can soar, and because we can't soar, or haven't learned yet to soar, we don't even do what we can do. We don't even walk. It's our attitude that determines what we will do. Attitude really does determine the quality of everything in our lives. But Mark, what is attitude?
Well, attitude is this, it's your thoughts. It's your thoughts, it's what you think about. But it's also your feelings. Attitude, it's your thoughts and your feelings and your actions. So that's what attitude is. It's your thoughts, your feelings and your actions. But the important thing to grasp is it's not any one of these. It's the composition of all three of them. See, a good attitude requires a congruence between all three. You can't act one way and think and feel another. That's not a good attitude. You can't think something but do something totally different. They need to be in harmony. It needs to stem from who we are. Now, most people are relatively comfortable with the idea of cause and effect. And many of us have been conditioned to believe that everything outside of us is the cause for what happens in our lives and what we feel on the inside. You know, we say things like, oh, he made me so bad. Or, I had a really bad day and it really upset me. See what you made me do? Do you get the picture? We habitually look for causes that are outside of us. But we really must realize that we are responsible for a great deal more than we often like to admit. In fact, the principle of emotional responsibility is one of the first principles in changing our feelings about ourselves, other people, or the world. We are responsible for our feelings. It may not feel like it, but we are. And until we buy into that, really buy into that, nothing in our lives is ever going to change. If you're unhappy with the results in any area of your life, the person responsible is always available for consultation. And guess where you'll find them? In the mirror. Now, my friend and mentor, Paul Martinelli, you know, he calls it plainly, who's the matter with me game? I love that. Who's the matter with me? Yeah, right. We're always playing the blame game. And it is so easy to do that. It's always someone else's fault. Always them, never me. It's so much easier that way, isn't it? But as Wayne Dyer says, he says, if you think other people are your problem, you're going to have to send the whole world into counselling for you to get better. And that's never going to work, is it? That looking outside for the cause is never going to bear you fruit. Now, it's like the guy on his hands and knees under a streetlight looking for his keys. And along comes one of his neighbours and he joins in the search. And after 10 minutes, he says to him, are you sure you dropped them here? I mean, they don't seem to be anywhere. And the guy replies, oh, no. I lost them in my house, but the lights aren't working. I can't see anything in there. So I thought it would be easier to look out here where there's light. It might be easier to look here, but there's no point in looking outside if that's where, you know, that's not where you lost the thing, right? You're looking in the wrong place. You're looking in the wrong place.
A good attitude, it starts with personal responsibility. Let me give you an example of the difference attitude can make. For me, everything I've touched, I've taught. Well, not quite everything. There are some things that many of my friends are glad that I avoid, like singing and cooking. The author Robert Louis Stevenson once said, I consider the success of my day based on the seeds I sow, not the harvest I reap. And that's a saying worthy of some thought and reflection. Rather than focusing on income, maybe we could focus some energy on investment of time. A couple of years ago, I was a participant in a self-development program that focused on finding your purpose in life. It was an online webinar, and to be honest, I attended initially more out of an interest in the technology and the teaching method than of the content. However, before the event had even started, I was invited to lead a breakout group and then to deliver one of the sessions. The topics that the program covered were to help you to identify your personal strengths and values and combine those with the lessons learned from your personal timeline. Now, I found the contribution from my personal timeline to be a fairly unusual element in the process, and actually one that revealed a really interesting feature for me. I noticed that over the years, I found myself professionally teaching a number of diverse topics, including ice skating, skiing, cycling, violin, piano, guitar, IT, project management, leadership, personal effective, all sorts of things. History has taught me that whatever I become interested in learning becomes an avenue to help others to learn too. Now that's all about attitude. I discovered that one of the best ways to learn any subject is to teach it to others. I remember becoming interested in leadership topics when I was a frequent traveller with work. I was spending quite a lot of time in stations and airport lounges, and it started off as a casual interest and then became more focused as my work involved leading larger teams, mainly in a project management role delivering control system refurbishment projects in the UK nuclear industry, and later when I launched my own business. One particular project in the voluntary sector took my interest some years ago and remains an ongoing passion to this day. It's resulted in my involvement in over several years in the leadership team for an online community with over 600 volunteers across 40 countries. It was a combination of these two threads from my personal interests and timeline that were coming together to point to a new direction that was to emerge for me and has become a particular passion and purpose. I was reminded of a quote that said, it's not the years in your life, it's the life in your years. And for me, that resonated with this newly identified purpose in life. John Maxwell calls this the law of contribution in his book, The 15 Invaluable Laws of Growth, where he notices that if you're not doing something with your life, it doesn't matter how long it is. It turns out that I'm not alone in finding personal fulfillment and helping others learn from my journey. And I've found that my greatest reward comes from knowing that others have found value in something I've shared. I'm fortunate enough to have learned from those that have gone before me. From some I've learned through reading books. From others it was the talks they've delivered or from online learning platforms. In many cases, I've been able to learn by putting ideas from other people into practice. And in other cases, I've been able to learn from the mistakes that I've made along the way, and there have been quite a few of those. Often it's the mistakes that have yielded the best learning experiences, and certainly the most memorable. I like the quote from John of Salisbury that says, we're like dwarves sitting on the shoulders of giants. We see more and things that are more distant than they did. Not because our sight is superior, or because we're taller than they are, but because they raise us up and by their great stature add to ours. It's our attitude that counts. So as I said earlier, attitude determines how much of our skill we'll actually use. You can have all the skills in the world, but it's not what you know, it's what you do with what you know that counts. And it's your attitude that determines what it is that you actually do.
Oh, absolutely, Roger. I can't agree more. When I spent a number of years running a large department for a French IT company, and my mantra was always, you know, we hire for attitude and we train for skill. Now, technical skills are relatively easy to obtain, but attitude is far more difficult. People bring that with them often, you know, and our attitude is a reflection of who we are. You know, you get these young people, the grads, they come in and they think that because they've got a degree, and they've had this qualification or that qualification, and they should be, you know, well paid, and they want to do certain jobs, and they're, you know, they're beyond other things, you know, like talking to customers. But you can look at the different salaries and discrepancies between people in the organisation, and it was sometimes very significant. You know, there might be two people doing very similar, even the same job, sat next to each other, and one might be earning almost twice what the other was earning. That same skills, that same job, but one was earning a ton more money. And guess which one we couldn't do without? And if we ever had to cut back numbers, guess which one would be the first out the door? Guess which one was the best value to the organisation? Yeah, the one paid the more. Why? Because they're the ones with the good attitude. And that actually is the one thing that comes very close to being everything about success or failure. And I know we all get hung up on money and qualifications, experience, talent, and these things are all important. But I believe, the rarest and most prized quality of all. And therefore, the one that is the highest rewarded is attitude. It's the magic ingredient that brings the others to life. And Zig Ziglar said, it's your attitude that determines your altitude. Your attitude determines your altitude. And he's so right. You know, you cannot rise above a certain level if your attitude is not right. And a great attitude is so much more than passively observing an objective world through a fake smile. You know, a great attitude, it seems to kind of magically connect us to all sorts of opportunities that somehow didn't exist before. Think about it yourself for a moment. Who would you rather work with? Someone with a good attitude or someone with a rubbish attitude? Would you be prepared to be a bit more patient with the development of their skills if they were fun to be around, if they were happy, optimistic, talking excitedly about the future, about all the opportunities they see, if they get on well with people, if they genuinely wanted to help? Of course you would. Of course you would. Everyone prefers to be around life-giving people rather than life-training people. Now, our attitude will determine whether or not we tend to be what you might call lucky. You know, it's providence on our side. People who expect to be lucky, who expect good things to happen to them more often than bad, actually go through life from one good situation to another. Now, a person with the attitude that they can't do something seldom does anything. A person who believes that they can does. Perhaps not the first time, but that attitude gives them the confidence to keep going until it's done. You know, they try a few times, they grow in the process, and eventually, bingo, you know, they've done it. And they may proceed with caution and care. They may go to great lengths to avoid making any unnecessary mistakes, but they keep moving forward. You know, they have an attitude of positive life expectancy. You know, Jesus explained it this way when he said, seek and you will find. And that's the core of the issue right there. If you go through your day looking for opportunities, you will find them. And if you go through your day looking for criticism from other people, you will see it. If you go through your day expecting people to let you down, guess what you're going to see all around you? If you go through your day looking for things that make you laugh, want to take a guess at what you find? Now, we always retain the ability to control our attitude. We can't control what happens to us. We can't control other people. But we can always choose how we respond. You know, Viktor Frankl was a psychiatrist who was held in a Nazi concentration camp during the war. And he said this. He said, everything can be taken from a man but one thing. The last of the human freedoms is to choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances. And when we expect responsibility for our attitude, when we accept what Viktor Frankl said, that we can choose our attitude, then it opens the door for us to capitalize on our vastly underutilized potential. Now, attitude is so key. In fact, just as an aside, if you didn't know that, then our High Flyers program is actually a 10-week leadership development course which focuses solely on attitude. Now, each lesson is a deep dive into one of 10 essential attitudes for leadership. So you want to know more about that, just go to cool-waters.co.uk/highflyers, all one word. Wow. That was a marathon session, wasn't it?
It certainly was.
We covered a lot. What was your favourite point that we shared today, Roger? What struck you?
I think the favourite point for me in all this territory of attitude is that we have a choice. Each one of us has a choice. It's if I buy a new car, if I buy a Mondeo, then the road is filled with Mondeos. If I buy an Insignia, the road is full of Insignias. It's the choices we make determine the things that we see around us. So if we choose to go into life with a good attitude, it's our choice. If we choose to go into life with a good attitude, we will see the good in the things around us.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. And I think one of the things I've really noticed as I've been studying this is I think the single most consistent trait that I can see between people who go through life enjoying it and people who go through life not. People who enjoy their life are people who determine their own reaction. And people who don't enjoy their life are the ones who say things like, so-and-so made me upset. You know, they're always blaming outside situations or people for how they feel, rather than, you know, taking control of their own attitude and their own responses. Absolutely.
Stephen Covey talks about it quite a lot in his book, The Seven Habits. He talks about it being the victim mentality or the victor mentality. Are you a victim of the things that happen to you, or are you a victor over the circumstances that come your way?
Yes, absolutely right. Yeah, and he talks about proactive, reactive people, doesn't he? Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, I think it's probably time for our Q&A session. So you just press *6 on your phone now. That will put you into the queue, and then we can have a talk. And don't forget, the recordings from the previous Empowerment Mentoring calls are all available on the Empowerment Mentoring website. And you can listen to them online, download them to your MP3, to your phone or computer, anytime, and listen to them on the go. Why wouldn't you want to listen to Roger's dulcet tones while you're walking the dog?
Okay, let's go to the phone lines.
All right.